I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The shenanigans continue. This is the Men's Room with Miles and Thrill.
So our own Mike Hawk and Steve Mix from Daily Mix Morning Show Friday will be holding the, parabolic?
Parabolic mics.
Parabolic microphone. They are the big clear dishes that you see. Cool. And they pick up all the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So, Odyssey, the company we work for, they are the home of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah,
in Kansas City. So I believe that's the Fox. I believe that's the Fox in Kansas City, because at one point in time, they offered me a job.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if it's still them, it's the same people. Either way, you guys get to be on the field and hold those microphones and watch an NFL game from the sideline.
Yeah.
So depending on where you're standing, you're either going to have the best seat in the house or the worst. But either way, it's going to be a cool experience.
Oh, for sure.
So our question based on that, good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment or experience? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Jason. Welcome to the men's room.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hola!
Yeah, so a little bit over 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to meet Adam Jones, a guitar player for Tool.
Oh, nice. What was the circumstance?
So, way back when they had first started the VIP experience, I did that and saw him in Spokane. I'll just say, the VIP experience back then was worth way more than it is now. But at the time, they had something that was, they call it a Q&A session with members of the band. I felt like it was more like a college lecture. You know, Adam gets up in front of everybody and talks about their writing techniques that pertain to polyrhythms and hands around his Gibson Les Paul for everybody, the silver birds for everybody to strum on. But he set aside like a full hour to sign autographs and take pictures. I got the opportunity to go up to him. I was like, man, I got to say something to him. I don't want to, like, fanboy out over him, right? Because I'm not like that. But honestly, when I discovered these guys' music when I was a teenager, I'm almost 40 now, but you know, I discovered them right before they released Lateralis, and music really got me out of a dark place. So I just said something really brief. I was like, hey man, I don't want to fanboy over you or anything, but I just want to say that, like, you're one of my guitar heroes. And he was like super gracious about it, you know. He just, hey, thanks man, I really appreciate it. And
that's
that was
awesome.
It. That was really all I got to say, but it was cool. You know?
But at least you had a good interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. You never know.
Sometimes
they don't want you to, they're like, I hate this.
Even though you're saying something remarkably complimentary, I'm not asking for your autograph, I'm not asking for a picture, I'm trying to relay a deep felt sentiment, and they just look at you like, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah. Geddy Lee could have cared less.
Right.
He did not want to be there. Like the limpest handshake.
Right.
You know, when someone just sticks their hand out like, blah. That's kind of where he was at.
I mean, I will say I'm glad it was him and not one of the other members of the band. I don't want to, you know, draw any judgments since I haven't met anybody else, but I have heard that one member of that band in particular would have been about like that. He doesn't like the you know, people fawning over him kind of thing. And, you know, and I get it, but I'm really glad it was somebody. That old saying about don't meet your heroes. Well, I'm glad that this wasn't an example of that. Right. I was really actually.
But I think the one member of that band you're talking about, it's pretty much known.
Would that be the lead singer?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's even a thing in like our industry. It's like, there's ways to get an interview, but like, he will just say yes or no. He doesn't want to do it. He makes no bones about it. So it's like, don't even bother.
And I'm okay with that.
You're right. It is Maynard, and I don't know if I can say this on the air, so get the dump button ready. I'm not cussing, but he has been known to refer to his fans as insufferable retards.
Jesus.
He actually doubled down on it, too, kind of. And I will say, I get it. He was pressed on it at one point, and he said, look, I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about the more fanatical fans. And if you know Tool fans, you know a lot of them can get, like,
very fanatical. Yeah.
So I kind of get where he's coming from. I got to at least play devil's advocate here. Again, I've never met the guy personally, so I don't want to pass judgment, but I'll put it this way. What I said to Adam, I would not have said to him, because I would have been afraid of getting that kind of blowback.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, my thing is, then why do you keep doing it? Inevitably, if you sign a record contract and agree to put out a record, the idea is that people are going to buy it, right?
You can't
back out of it. If that's why you're doing it, that's exactly what you hope happens. Then these people sustain your livelihood. They come to your shows. And I get the people can be fanatical, for sure. But also, on some level, be proud that you've moved people in such a way that you would describe them as fanatical for something that's music. You know what I mean? You're not making them do something stupid. People aren't going crazy. It's like, it's music, and people like it that much? Good.
Have you ever heard?
I guess with him in that band, it doesn't bug me as much. Because you also don't see them, like, eating outside the Ivy or whatever in Beverly Hills.
Right.
They stay so much out of the spotlight, I'm just like, all right. And they let, you know, like, our music sells.
I get that, but you don't need to insult your own fans.
Well, to me, I never would. There's a level of that celebrity that just won't talk to you.
And that's okay.
And you know who those people are.
Yeah.
They're Madonnas. They're Bob Dylan's. They're Axl Rose's.
Sure.
You've never even heard Axl Rose's voice.
Right.
You don't even know what that guy sounds like.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do interviews. I don't even think he talks to anybody.
And that's okay.
And that's fine.
Because he's not just insulting anyone.
No.
He's just,
that's just
disappeared.
That's the way
I would say on the other side, you guys remember the super group Hell Yeah?
Yeah.
Right?
So those guys.
Vinnie Paul was in it, right? Tom Maxwell, Chad Gray, but they were doing a show. They were just kind of like, I don't think they'd been together that long, but they're doing a show at Alcor's Zone. Now, somebody else is supposed to host this Q&A with them, put on, I want to say, by Guitar Center.
All right.
About playing the guitar.
Sure.
So, anyhow, I don't know who's supposed to do it. Somebody falls out. Castle calls me and goes, can you walk down there and do it? I said, sure. So, it's Alcor's Zone, but now I'm upstairs backstage before the fans get up there. And, like, Vinnie Paul, right, I guess it was Chet, they're just, like, looking at me, and they say something, and I go, I don't know. And Vinnie Paul's like, do you have any idea about, like, music or our music specifically? And I just went, I honestly, dude, I don't. And he goes, oh, it's all right, man. You want a beer?
I was like, oh, thank God.
And then, like, because the handler was kind of not happy with me. And he's like, no, we'll handle it. He goes, just you know, introduce us. I said, all right, I could do that. But they couldn't have been nicer. Like, I think I just looked, honestly, they're intimidating dudes.
They look intimidating.
I was like a deer in headlights. I'm like, I don't know. And he's just like, do you have any idea what you're doing up here? I'm like, no.
Dude, that's what I'd always say about Zach Wilde, right? Zach Wilde, he was here years ago, whatever, he's supposed to do. Back to Alcor's Zone. He's going to do a meet and greet and sign some autographs. Same kind of thing. I think talk about some guitar stuff. Whatever. Things go south here. He gets hammered, passes out on the kitchen floor, shows up at this thing late. There's people there hoping to get autographs, blah, blah, blah. He shows up, and he walks right by the autograph table, right? And we're like, oh, no. There's some cover band or something that's going to play. He looks at this guy in the band, give me your guitar. And this guy's more than happy to hand him his guitar. Looks at the band, hey, man, do you guys know whatever song? They're like, yeah. He's like, let's do it. 1, 2, 3, 4. And now this band, who had absolutely no expectation of jamming with Zach Wilde, man, and he is shredding. I mean, he's going all out. And then he's looking out in the audience like, hey, man, I want to play, name a song. Who can sing it? Right? And people are like, well, I can't. Well, get the F up here on stage, man. And, I mean, I was like, this might be the coolest thing I've seen someone do. This is a guy that is so gracious and so happy to have people that want to see him. I'm like, this is the guy you want on your side. Maybe not with the wet beard and getting drunk, but, man.
That smell.
Shredding on stage. I was like, this is cool. Yeah.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Dave. Welcome to the men's room.
Super Dave, you mean?
Sure.
Super Dave, yep.
Yep. Hola.
Hola.
So, Back when Tiger Woods came up and played at Sahali on the PGA, that tournament that was up there, my parents lived in Sahali, so I got to go with my parents or my dad, wherever he had to go. Well, on the last day, he had to stand up in the grandstand on the 18th green, and so he said, come on with me. So I went up there, and all we had to do was look at tickets and tell people to go sit down. And Tiger's coming up the fairway. It's a bad shot for his second shot onto the green, has to make a birdie putt to tie Vijay Singh, and he missed it just by like 2 inches. Par's out. As they're walking off the green, they're right underneath me, and I lean down and said, that's all right, Tiger. Get him on the next one. He looks up at me like, you dumbass, that was the last hole.
Oh. Super Dave.
But I got the look from Ty. It was awesome.
That is great.
That is cool.
It's got a funny last hole.
I was caught up in the excitement. So I saw you guys in Auburn at your very first ever.
What was that, like an Alcohol of Fame or something?
No. That was when you guys were doing, you started doing the shows. You'd come down to a tavern or something and do a live show. And I was the guy that came up. There was a guy sitting in this booth and he spilled his beer. And the three other people there, they said, well, you know the rule. You got to finish your beer drinking it through a straw through your nose.
What?
And I started watching. Yeah, I was watching this and I ran up to the stage and said, you guys got to see this. And you guys all came down and watched this guy drinking a beer through his nose with a straw.
Wait, did he have a bunch of facial hair?
I believe so.
I think I actually remember this guy. I think that was kind of his go-to move. Do you guys remember?
How do you get chicks? Watch this.
I'm pretty sure.
He was paying the price for spilling his beer.
No, I understand, but I think I remember this guy. I think it was like a blonde dude who had a mustache and beard. And like that was his go-to move. He could drink a beer with a straw through his nose, and he would do it upon request. I think I do remember this guy.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
That's kind of stuff I remember,
Ted. I was about to say. Oh, yeah. But that guy, you remember.
I'm so busy. I'm like,
have we been to that bar? Yeah, dude, we've been there.
Don't remember. That guy, I remember. I can tell you what he looks like. Yeah. Hello, Murphy. Welcome to the men's room.
How you doing? This is Murphy.
Hola.
What's up, Murphy? Murphy.
Hola, the cholas. So, I was 4 or 5 years old. It was 1964, I think. Am I there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I grew up in Miami Beach, and my mother's boyfriend took me down to go meet this new boxer who was going to fight Sonny Liston. And he takes me down to the Fifth Street Gym in Miami Beach, and I meet Cassius Clay.
All right.
And he reaches down to shake my hand, and his hand was so big I could only grab one finger and shake his hand. So
he was probably Olympic years at that point.
Yeah, he was getting ready. He was getting ready to fight Sonny Liston the next night in Miami Beach.
So he'd already done the Olympics. Okay, all right.
That is pretty cool.
That's crazy.
My mother met him. My mother's friend dated him. However many years ago, I don't know the year, but I think it's pre-Sonny Liston, but he was still Cassius Clay. And she said, he was a good-looking guy, but he's just so cocky. And this is back in the day, so she's like, a brother shows up in a convertible Cadillac. So she's like, he must be selling drugs, something. And he just, that's not the case. He's getting treated well by the gym owners and all this kind of thing. They just kind of knew, like, this guy's got something. And she said he was all right, just super cocky was the whole thing. So she's like the third wheel on their date or whatever, but pulls up, it's nice to meet you, Carolyn. And she's like, well, what do you do? I'm a fighter. She's like, no, I mean, like, for real, what do you do? I'm a fighter. You ever heard of boxing? Yeah, of course I've heard of boxing. I'm a boxer. But I think this is pre-Olympics and all that kind of thing. But he swore he was going to be the world champion. She was like, he spent most of the night talking about himself, how awesome he was, blah, blah, blah. But she said it wasn't even quite annoying. It's like he was so cocky that it was almost entertaining. Anyway, she forgets about this guy because it just doesn't matter. And she's like, sure enough, we're watching the Olympics. And she's like, at this point, she's with my dad. And she's like, that's the guy I was telling you about. That's him. And he's getting his gold medals and all this. She's like, I will be damned. My man went out there and did exactly what he said he was going to do.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
Quick side note, she also knew, who was the guy that played saxophone in
Clarence Street Clemens.
Yeah, she said, nice guy. They went to school together. And I was like, what was he like? She's like, you know, he was really nice. He literally played the saxophone all the time. Between every class, he's playing it in the hall. Everyone's kind of cool. And then she added, he's the ugliest mother effer in the school. Like, damn, huh? It's like, he was just ugly, ugly.
Yeah, my dad always had something against the Orioles bullpen coach.
Why?
What was his name? Elrod Hendricks or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he always insisted that a lot of things were Elrod's fault. So one year on Mother's Day, we go early, and they would have members of the team and the staff out there handing out roses to moms. And it happened to be Elrod Hendricks. And me and my brother just thought that was the greatest thing of all time.
But he was the one who gave it to your mom?
Yes.
Oh. Just a picture. I mean, just circumstantially.
Just because we knew it would send him. He would be what? Like pissed.
He's actually a pretty good dude.
I could have been nicer.
Did a couple appearances with that guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And who gets mad at the bullpen coach?
And your dad, and that's it.
Right?
That is it.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
Guess who it is, Ted?
James,
welcome to the men's room.
Hola. So, long-time listener. I've called in a few times from here in Seattle as well as in Albuquerque when I was living down there. But I've got a real good story. When I was living in Albuquerque, it was 2017. My mom found out that her favorite band of all time was playing in Tulsa, ZZ Top. And she'd never gone to a concert before. And looking up the prices and whatnot.
Wait, your mom had never been to a concert before?
That is correct.
Wow.
How far is that drive?
I mean, it was, 500-600 miles one way.
Wow.
Okay. But we scored third row VIP meet and greet for $300 each.
All right.
And, I mean, VIP meet and greets nowadays, thousands of dollars. But, I mean, it was her birthday, first concert ever, and I was like, we're going. So, we drove out from Albuquerque, stayed at a casino in Tulsa where they were performing. And, throughout the show, we're in the third row. We almost reach out and touch these guys. I mean, this was before, Frank Beard died. But it was, Billy Gibbons.
Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty
Hill.
Died.
And Dusty then, Hill.
Dusty Beard, Rhodes. The only guy named Beard that didn't have a beard. He was a drummer.
Yeah.
We go out there. She's, the happiest I've ever seen her in my life, And just being able to experience that. We got our pictures taken with them. And it was just great. We still have the pictures. We got them all framed up. They had autographed them. And
that's awesome.
Able to just take her out there and have that experience. I mean, she's gone to like 7 or 8 shows since then, but she's like, nothing will ever top that.
They're coming into town very soon, right?
Well, I've seen them twice since Dusty died, and it's still great. It's just not the same.
It's not good, but to be fair, I've never seen them with Dusty. So I saw the commercial last night. I believe it's Muckleshoot. They're going to play it. And I'm like, whoever they got to replace him kind of looks like him anyway.
ZZ Top is so good.
Yeah, and I'm like, he's so good.
He's been with the band a long time. He's known the guys forever. He's played with them. So it's not like some new person that's unaffiliated with the group. It's, somebody that knows, that's been there.
Oh, yeah. He had that look about him. Because I'm watching the commercial. I'm like, man, I think I want to go to that show.
And I highly recommend it. The longest, before Dusty died, they were the longest group running of all time.
Really?
Like 69, I think it was.
Damn. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they're just one of those bands. Everything they do is cool.
I know.
I don't know.
Whenever you hear one of those tunes, you're like, man, I really like ZZ Top.
We need to play more ZZ Top on the station.
You almost can't. Girl who lives on the hill.
It's like, And I love the dudes that look like that sing about sex all the time. And I'm like,
are they really good? But her sister will.
Yeah. That's the greatest line ever. That's one of them. Lyrically speaking, it's dumb, it's bull crap, but it's still like cheesy, but it's still fun.
Lord, take me downtown. I'm looking for some tush. I mean, look,
exactly.
They get to the point, man.
Step inside my sleeping bag, even the lighter stuff.
We're not here to be poetic. We're just here to make a point.
I mean, I think if you took those two guys just on their own, maybe not. But because there's ZZ Top, yes. It's kind of like Lemmy.
No. Yeah, Lemmy got laid.
Yeah.
But if you were not the Lemmy that we know Lemmy, he's like, no chance. Actually, Lemmy had one of the best quotes. It's like during the 80s and crap like Poison's taking over, Warrants and all that. And someone asked him point blank, do all these pretty boy bands bother you? Yes. No. I wish I was. Yeah. I'm like, you know what?
That's a great line.
That is the best answer ever, man. It's like, good for them.
Wish I was better looking, too.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
You're in the men's room. Text the guys at 206-803-ROCK.
Here's one that doesn't happen every day. Meteorite that crashed through a Georgia home in June has turned out to be a true relic of the early solar system. Matter of fact, this thing is so old, it's older than Earth itself.
All right.
The meteorite streaked across the sky in daylight. It broke apart and landed in McDonough, Georgia. Now, NASA, they confirmed the event after residents across Georgia and nearby states reported seeing a fireball and a big loud boom. So scientists at the University of Georgia, they analyzed fragments that struck the house, determined the rock is a chondrite, which is a common type of stony meteorite. Now, using optical and electron microscopy, team estimated the rock formed about 4.56 billion years ago. That's roughly
about the age of the Earth, isn't it?
20 million years older than Earth.
All right, give or take.
Well, you're in the billions at that point, right? The meteorite was traveling 2,237 miles an hour as it came into this guy's house. It missed him by 14 feet.
Oh, now,
when the rock
laugh, but that's crazy.
When the rock hit the floor, it basically disintegrated into the floor into particles. There was enough energy when it hit the floor that it pulverized part of the material down to literal dust fragments. 14 feet away, his house struck by a meteorite.
He had to S a brick.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Emmett. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola.
Hola.
Emmett.
So when I was 17, I had the opportunity to hike Pikes Peak in Colorado.
All right.
And at the top of Pikes Peak, there is a donut shop. So I was able to get donuts at 14,000 feet.
That's kind of awesome.
There's a, wait a minute. There's a donut shop at the top of Pikes Peak.
Yes.
How many, like when you went in there to get your well-earned donut, how many other people are, and look, I love donuts, man. I might kill a man for a donut. I don't know if I'd hike Pikes Peak for a donut.
I wouldn't recommend it. They were not the greatest donuts.
Donuts in the sky.
So you do all that hiking up Pikes Peak to get a donut, and then when you have the donut, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
Damn.
And that's where you're just eating that donut to say you ate it.
I know, but at least maybe Krispy Kreme could take it over. Like, look, we're going to make the donut worth it.
So you can either drive up to the top or hike it, I guess?
Yeah.
Or is there like a tram?
We hopped up and drove down.
Okay.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
But a donut shop at the
you
top
can get
of
fried
Pikes
chicken
Peak.
At the pyramids.
Donuts at the top of Pikes Peak.
What a great world we live in. Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Troy. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, gentlemen.
Hola.
Well, at least they know where to get fried chicken and donuts.
Yeah, sure, ma'am. Yeah. Well, no, the fried chicken's good in Egypt. Apparently, the donuts suck at the top of Pikes Peak.
Right. So, I hope you guys have good AC in the going on there today. This is brutal.
We have here.
Yeah.
Not at home.
It's 87 outside right now downtown, though.
Yeah.
It's steamy.
Yeah, I know. I just came from downtown. But I had actually two things that were kind of unique, but Mike told me to stick with my Willie Nelson story.
All right.
So my dad, who's a minister, well, retired now, of course, but he did like charity or philanthropy projects that involved Willie Nelson and Kris Kristofferson. And when Willie Nelson was on tour, he ended up in Tucson, Arizona. I think it was like 1988, 89, something like that.
That was Highwayman.
His manager. No, it wasn't the Highwayman. I think it was the family tour because his sister was with him.
Okay.
Yeah. But so his manager called up my dad and had tickets available for him and backstage passes. And so I went with my dad to go see Willie Nelson. And after the show, our passes allowed us to go backstage. And there were like two levels of being backstage. And our passes only got us to the minimal level. And people who could go meet and greet with Willie had better passes. But we did get to see him as he walked by. And my dad just said, "Hey, Willie." And he's like, "Oh, David, hey." And he "Come on with me." And he grabbed my dad and myself. And we went through the next section where he meeted and greeted with the next level of backstage pass people. And then when they were all done, he led us out into the back lot where he had his tour bus, Honeysuckle Rose. And he invited my dad and myself into the Honeysuckle Rose with him and his sister. There and just had a conversation, and Willie said, "Would you like something? Would you like a Coke?" And you know, I was totally geeking out. I was just like, "Oh, okay."
That's
awesome.
Did Willie smoke
with myself? I was so starstruck at the moment.
Did Willie smoke on the bus with you and your dad?
No, he did. I knew you were going to ask. He did not, but there was a lingering...
There was evidence.
I was about 19, 20 at that time, and I knew that smell well.
Oh, yeah. I bet your dad did, too, regardless of his profession.
I won't speak for him.
He would. I have no idea what that is, son. No idea.
Right. Exactly.
That's pretty cool, man. Horrible, that is because Willie Nelson's one of those guys. I mean, just super icon, right?
Yeah. Correct.
You can like his music, not like his music. In the end, you're like, but it's Willie Nelson.
I think I was 14 or 15, my first concert.
All right.
And I smelled it, and I was like, that's the smell.
Uh-huh.
That's the smell of my dad's house. What? Like, I still did not know.
Were you so starting for, like, what is that smell?
I know it. That smells like my dad's house. What is
that? I like that it's so specific. Not like his garage.
Nobody else.
His house.
His house.
Right. His house.
Yes, it does. So eventually, I don't even think I figured it out that night.
Right.
You know, just like, I didn't know. I know that smell.
Well, you don't know. I mean, the first time I smelled weed, same thing. I was at a concert. I was almost 14 years old. Went there, smelled it everywhere. Did not know what the smell was, and it was just weird, because I'm like, God damn, man. Like, everywhere you go, this was the Rochester War Memorial Coliseum, I don't remember, but their arena there, and, I mean, no matter where I go into the bathroom, like, man, it's really thick in here. I went back out to the floor where the concert is, like, God, man, I smell this everywhere. And my assumption, there was a haze in the air, but I figured it was cigarettes.
Yeah.
And my dad smoked cigarettes, so I'm like, golly, man, these cigarettes smell rank. And then you're right. You have the epiphany some point later, like, oh.
Not anymore. I think the one that bothers me the most is cloves.
I cannot take
that smell.
It is a very unique and pungent smell.
Yeah.
I think, was it Johnny Depp smokes cloves?
Right, and he's kind of known for smelling like ass.
And then there was a guy on that show, The X-Files. I called him the Marlboro Man, because any scene he was in, he smoked, right? He's kind of this creepy guy that knew what was going on but wouldn't quite share. But he was always smoking. So you don't give it a thought, but they talked to, like, David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson after the fact, like, he was not a smoker, but because of the character, he would smoke clothes. And like, and we hated it, right? Like, dude, smoke a regular cigarette. He's like, I'm not a smoker, but my character's a smoker, but my character smokes Marlboros, but they were clothes. So it was just funny, because anytime I'd see a scene with this guy, I'm like, every actor on this set hates filming this scene.
Mm-hmm. Remember, there was a guy that worked across the street, and he seemed like the kind of guy that would smoke a clove.
Yeah.
I think in the wintertime, he was in like a duster or something.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Right. You could just, if you walked out, you could be like, oh, he's smoking a clove.
He's going to smell
it a mile away.
Because that guy, he's like this steampunk.
Is that the shirt Sherlock Holmes guy?
Yeah. And I mean, he goes out of his way to make sure that you know that he's into steampunk. He's like the most pretentious dude ever. Not the mustache, the hat, the whole nine. But that's his thing. And to his credit, for the 7 or 8 years in this building that we've seen him, it never changes. Like, that is what my man does. Of course he smokes clothes.
Good or bad, what was your once-in-a-lifetime moment? 206-803-ROCK.
I don't know why that annoys me. Like, of course he smokes clothes, but the fact that you actually smoke clothes just makes me like you less. I don't know what it is about him, man. He just bugs me.
Yeah, and I don't know, because cigars are just as bad and pungent, but they don't bug me as much.
That's it, right?
There's a clove, I'm just like, ugh, it smells like crap.
Because I feel like, you know, with the cigar, it smells like a cigar. A clove smells like pretense.
Pipe smells great.
Pipes smell awesome. And it was disappointing the first time I hit one. I'm like, this does not taste the way it smells.
I still love the smell of a Black and Mild.
They smell good. Does anyone still smoke pipes? When I was growing up, man, like 50% of the people I knew, their dads anyway, they always fill in the pipe, light it up, blow out the smoke, and you're like, God, this smells great. Pipes and nutcrackers, man.
I went through a phase where we would smoke pipes when I lived with all those dudes. And that it was one summer, and that was just our thing.
Yeah, about 3-4 years ago, I experimented a little bit with it.
Oh, yeah?
It was fun.
Did you like it?
It was fun. I did enjoy it. It became kind of a ritual thing for a hot minute there. It was fun.
Where did you even find pipe tobacco?
It feels sophisticated.
It does. I gained an interest in pipes because same thing. They were just cool.
Yeah.
You know, they were distinguished. They were just awesome.
Distinguished, that's the word. It's like wearing a monocle.
I told my brother-in-law about it years ago, and then all of a sudden he started this tradition that when he and my sister went somewhere, he would bring me back a pipe.
Okay.
And there was at one point where he brought me back just an actual proper good, this is just everyday smoker pipe. I was like, I'm going to smoke this one. I'm going to give it a go. It's fine.
You have the look of a guy that if you broke out a pipe and I didn't know you, somehow I'd be like, that makes sense.
Yeah. But just my outfit, it never quite works. I just look like a nerd who's smoking a pipe.
You need more tweed, Mike.
I do,
That's
man.
What you're saying.
You do, but like, if you invited me to get breakfast and then afterwards went, do you want to go have a smoke? And it was a pipe. I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sure, Mark. I'm going to have a pipe smoke with you.
It takes a lot, dude. You got to pack that thing down.
It's a pain in the ass.
You got to pack it again. And
that's what we found out the hard way is we were like, it's so cheap to buy the tobacco.
Right.
And we were like, we're going to do this. But then it's like, you feel like you're out there for half an hour. You've like gotten two puffs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then it's done.
Yeah.
It's all there for like 5 minutes.
I think it's the ritual they probably enjoyed.
Yes. And that's what I found.
And also, they were smoking inside.
They were smoking
inside. If I could sit inside, I had a babysitter and her husband in the basement. That's what he did. Love that guy. But if I was sitting inside and had a little time to mess around with it, sure, I'd watch a sports game and smoke a pipe.
Yes!
You know, that's a good point, right? You go to have to go outside to smoke it, right?
Right, like you smoke a cig. You walk out there, you pull out the cig, you light it. Boom.
No prep. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bitch, hola.
Hola!
So this was some years ago. A buddy of mine was fighting cancer, and one of his coworkers, Jeff, was in the band Loaded with Duff McKagan.
Oh, nice.
And they're going to do a fundraiser at the old Hell's Kitchen on 6th Avenue in Tacoma. And so I remember going there, and my buddy's like, hey, Duff's around the corner if you want to talk to him. I'm like, what? And sure enough, I walk around the corner, and there's Duff McKagan, bass player of one of the best bands of all time, Guns N' Roses, sitting by himself at a two-top table. And so I sit down and got to tell him what Appetite for Destruction meant to me. I was a young soldier stationed in West Germany. And that, just I remember that album that year, that summer, it was everywhere. And you listen to it over and over, and you realize that every song was just killer.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
There's not a bad song on that thing.
There's really not.
No, there's not one.
And then he was nice enough to, after he played his show, he's signing autographs, and he gets to me, and he goes, well, I'll sign it, but that's not my band. And I, like, looked at the flyer that I grabbed, and it started with L, but it wasn't Loaded. And I was like, God dang it. So I had, like, throw away, run to the front of the, grab another one and come back, and he signed it for me. And
the Lumineers.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And he was, like I said, he was good. But one of the nicest guys you ever wanted to meet, just unconceited, you know, nice and easy to get along with. Yeah, I just was very impressed by him.
He's a super chill guy.
I was going to say, Duff, hands down, one of the nicest dudes.
And we've gotten used to him now, but the first time I met him, I was very, very, very starstruck for the same reason, because Appetite for Destruction was what it was, right? And if you liked rock music and you were alive when this album came out, that's one of your game changers. And Jeets, they used to work here. An interview with Duff coming up. He's going to record it after our show. But he goes, look, man, I'm not going to get in until 6:30. Can you just hang a little bit and let Duff in? I'm like, sure, man. And in my mind, I'm like, you got it. There's no way he's going to be interviewing Duff McKagan, even though that's what he said. Sure enough, Duff kind of taps on the door. I let him in, but it's just the two of us, man. And I'm trying to be cool, and I wasn't, but I'm trying to be cool. And at that time, we had the kegerator in the office.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, man, can I get you anything to drink? We got a kegerator in the office. Oh, that's right, man. I was going to offer you a beer, but your pancreas exploded. This is my opening statement to Duff McKagan. And he just looked at me and he goes, yeah, man, my pancreas exploded.
I was, right. What's supposed to say?
I felt so stupid. Like, in that moment, happened. I felt so, so, so stupid. I'm like, I cannot believe these are the words that came out of my mouth.
God.
When you have your opportunity to meet Duff McKagan is to point out something he probably doesn't want to talk
about.
Does
it not work anymore at all, his pancreas?
I mean, it exploded.
Okay.
I don't know.
Does that make him a diabetic then at that point?
I don't know. Sadly, I did not get down that rabbit hole.
Didn't think to go down
that. Does that make you a diabetic?
Right.
Are you diabetic?
One follow-up question.
I don't want to offer you more sugar. I will say, one of the coolest moments we had.
Can I look at your my chart?
I want to say, all of us were there. So Soundgarden shows up for an interview. Minus Chris Cornell. Right? So the other three guys, it's after our show. We're going to record something with them. I don't remember why we couldn't record yet, but we just couldn't. We had to wait. So I'm sitting there with three guys from Soundgarden. My wife's pregnant. My dog is up there. Right? And I remember watching Kim Thayil play Catch My Dog in the hallway of the radio station. At some point, I'm like, this is so surreal, man, because I love that band, right? Everyone's just checking. And I want to say, Miles, you and Kim started talking about beer. And went into the office, and you're talking about all these different beer labels. Cameron sitting. I mean, it was just unreal. My pregnant wife's talking to Ben Shepherd, and it's just everyone was just casual, man. And I'm like, this is cool. Soundgarden's playing catch with my dumbass dog. My pregnant ass wife's talking to Ben Shepherd. Everyone's just talking beer. It was cool, man. And I'm like, that's not one of those things that's going to happen again.
Working in the auction business, my old man does an auction down there in Phoenix for the Boys and Girls Club down there in Metro Phoenix. And that is their big, big, big auction that they do all the time. And for years, they gave him they would give him some sort of a bonus. And that is the year that we went to the Super Bowl to go see the Seahawks and play down there in Phoenix, right? It did come with one condition, is that when we went down there, we had the tickets. We had four tickets to get in. They said, the only thing we need you guys to do, we need you to do one more auction for us. We've got this. We've got a little fundraiser. We got a little auction that we do. It's going to be a pro bono thing. It's no worries at all. Yep, it's all fine. We'll go down there. We end up at some big mansion. I have no idea whose mansion this belongs to, but there were so many people that showed up to this thing. Michael Bay was there. Mark Wahlberg was up on stage with the old man. Maria Menounos was his MC for the night. The doggone semi-truck that was Optimus Prime was there. The Budweiser Clydesdales were there.
Who was it? You seriously don't know to this day?
I don't know whose place it was, but we were just there raising money for, you know, just another auction. It was just another charity auction gig that we were doing. The big dude from The Blind Side was there walking around.
And you never found Michael Orr's house. I think going to a Super Bowl.
It might have been Orr's house. I'm not positive.
Just going to one Super Bowl, that's once in a lifetime.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, for most people.
And I love
it. If you want to go, I mean, you're shelling out buco bucks. Every year it gets ridiculous. I mean, the price this year was probably three times.
And I would say this. When we went. It's almost once in a lifetime to go to a Super Bowl with your team playing in it.
Yes.
That's why if you get the opportunity, just do it. But going to any Super Bowl, it's still the Super Bowl. Even if you hate both teams, whatever the case is, it's still the Super Bowl. And when we went, I don't know why I didn't just assume this would be the case. There were 49ers fans. There were Ravens fans. They're playing each other. It makes sense. But then we realized a lot of people just bought tickets to the Super Bowl, but they're wearing the jersey of their team. There's Bengals fans. There's Jag fans. And everyone rolls into the stadium. And I'm like, this is cool. This is a football event. It's not just about the two teams playing.
Right.
And it was super expensive. Because my son always says, Dad, if the Ravens go to the Super Bowl, are we going to the Super Bowl? And I'm like, okay.
You going
to
get a paper out?
First of all, you're a kid.
I said, brother. Well, I told him, I said, I want to do that. But you got to understand, the price of these tickets, like Miles said, they go up, I mean, by leaps and bounds every year.
It's getting to the point where the ceiling has got to be somewhere.
You hope?
Well, just tickets in general. Like, when is this all going to cap out? Because it just seems to just keep going.
Well, that's like saying, when are the corporations going to get smaller?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole issue. As long as, especially like Super Bowl.
Because they'll buy them up.
Giant F1 race. As long as corporations buy it up, then they're not.
Yep.
That's exactly. Sorry to be so harsh, but just.
No, but that's the truth.
It's not going to come. Right. It's not like the average fan is making this stuff so expensive for everybody else.
I would encourage, if you can, as a football fan, go to where the Super Bowl is hosted. You're not going to be able to stay in the city, not at all. But if you know the area well enough to where you can find your way to get in on any given day and stay in, you know, on an outskirts city, go to where they're hosting the Super Bowl.
Because
I agree with that.
I would say it depends where it is, too. We were lucky it was in New Orleans. So the Superdome is right next to Canal Street, right next to the French Quarter. So you could just walk everywhere. And it was cool because the whole city is throwing down. And then right before kickoff, there's just this mass parade of people headed toward the stadium, and it's less than a mile, right? But if it's played in Dallas, it's in the middle of a freaking parking lot near 8,000. Like that, I'm not saying don't go, but the experience of going there is a lot different. If they did it in Seattle, it'd be that kind of thing. Go to Pioneer Square, go downtown, go to the waterfront, go to Capitol Hill, go to SoDo, go wherever you want. It's right there.
What was all-day parking for the Super Bowl? The day.
To be honest with you, dude, there was so much crowd that was going around there, I didn't even look at parking.
I can tell you what mine was.
What?
$35.
Mm-hmm.
$35 all day?
Downtown.
Yeah.
$35.
I mean, that's 2015.
Yes. Money. When you look at it now, you're like $90-some for a regular schmuck game.
You can't get that for week three out here.
I was like $35.
I will say, the other cool thing, if you shell out for those big sporting events,
yeah.
Like, I wouldn't pay to go see F1 in Vegas again. But it was the first one. So that's the main reason we went.
Yeah.
Also, when the race ended, I like a DJ named Martin Gurex. He did a free show. So it's like, ooh, got to see Martin Gurex kind of for free.
But that's true. When you have those events, right, there's always.
Then when I went to the Husky national title game, I don't know if Maryland's ever going to make it there. So I don't know if I'd ever go back. Right.
I'm sorry.
Don't say it like
come on, man.
But the night before, because we had game tickets, we got to see this country artist named John Party for free.
So it's like you knock out kind of two birds with one stone.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you just get to see cooler stuff. I know we got to go to break, Mike, but I will say we've had very positive stories. Now, on the other end,
I'm here to ruin it.
If you like college football, one of the biggest traditions in all of college football is in University of Tennessee.
Yeah,
before the games, they play Rocky Top and they run through the tee. The band like intermixes, like the tee just kind of shows up out of nowhere. The team runs through it. They've only not run it twice in 50 some years. And I was there on one of those Saturdays. They didn't run through it.
No.
That was the whole point. Go watch them run through the
tee. You went there just for that.
They didn't run through the tee.
10 worst songs ever coming up with Sit and Spin. And your email's coming up next to the Men's Room at KISW.com.